Welcome to Existence, Moments in Time. I'm Andrew Hiller. I'm sorry to inform you that something is clearly afoot. As we stalk through the morning fog, observe carefully, for we must not overlook any clue. Gather your resources and assistance. Luckily, we have one of the world's foremost Sherlock Holmes experts, the Red Circle's own Peter Blau, to guide us through the assembled collection of evidence, a collection that has stumped and delighted readers for 125 years.
People sometimes ask me what it is that I like about Sherlock Holmes, and my answer is nothing. Sherlock Holmes was insufferable. He was arrogant, he was rude, he didn't suffer fools gladly, and I have a great deal of sympathy for Dr. Watson, who had to live with him and put up with all of this stuff.
Sherlockian Peter Blau belongs to 10 Sherlock Holmes societies, including the infamous Baker Street Irregulars. In his hometown of Washington, D.C., he's the chief organizer of the Red Circle. How he found the group is a bit of a mystery.
They never had a listing in the phone book. Supposedly, the reason for that is that they wanted to force people who wanted to find the local Sherlockian society to do some detective work. Go to your local reference librarian and say, are there other Sherlockians around?
Of course, clues to secret societies aren't only hidden in libraries.
Today, you can go to the internet. There is a website called Sherlocktron, Sherlocktron. And there's a lot of stuff there, but there are also lists of Sherlockian societies, including one, the Geographical Societies. And you can do a text search for your state. If you're in Texas, you look for TX.
We are coming to the 125th anniversary, not of the first Sherlock Holmes story, the first Sherlock Holmes anthology. Why is that a significant day? Why is that a significant moment?
Well, it's a very significant moment when the only entertainment that you had available to you was reading. In 1892, there was no radio, no television. There weren't any movies to go to. If you wanted to get outside your own world, you had to read or listen to someone read to you. And Sherlock Holmes started off in the Strand magazine in July 1891. By the time the first series of stories was finished, they were published in books. Well, there were lots of people who subscribed to the Strand magazine, but a lot more people who bought books. So you could go to the bookstores and buy The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes and take them home and read them or read them to your family. Reading to your family was a big thing in those days. It brought the family together. The way when I was growing up, families would sit around a radio and listen to the radio together. That's why books are important. Books are something that are stable. A magazine gets read and thrown away, but books are kept. And I think books are very important in preserving anything, culture, history, amusement, no matter what it is.
For Blau, it might not have been any one story that launched him into Sherlock Holmes. He can't recall the first story he read. For him, it's the community and the camaraderie that made the books become real.
When I'm asked what my favorite Sherlock Holmes story is, I like to say it's the one I read most recently. I enjoy reading the pastiches and the parodies. I like short stories more than novels, but no, there's no one story I'd recommend to anyone.
That said, while there may not be an undisputed best story, Blau contends that there are good places to start.
If you ask me, what's the first Sherlock Holmes story you should read? There are three that bring people into the world of Sherlock Holmes. The novel is The Hound of the Baskervilles. It's a frightening story. You don't want to read that book for the first time when you're young in a house where the wind is blowing and the trees are rattling against the window, and it's easy to be afraid. The other two stories are The Speckled Band, which is a young woman in peril. It's a gothic short story, and The Red-Headed Lee, which is really grotesque. And these are stories that I think get people's attention.
The deductions of Holmes had a real-life origin. Arthur Conan Doyle, as a student, studied under a forensic scientist and professor by the name of Joseph Bell.
Joseph Bell could look at you and tell from the way you were dressed what your occupation was.
While Joseph Bell could deduce your class, profession, and other characteristics based on your dress, Blau confesses that the iconic clothes of Sherlock Holmes belong a bit more to the movies than the collections.
One of the wonderful things about Sherlock Holmes is one of the icons, the funny hat, the deerstalker hat. It's very hard to find Sherlock Holmes without his deerstalker. In Conan Doyle's days, Sherlock Holmes would have worn the deerstalker only in the country. In the city, he wore a top hat. And if you look at the Granada series, he wore a top hat. He dressed up for the city when he went out in the country. Then he wore a deerstalker. But the illustrators, now the people who make movies and television, show him wearing a deerstalker all the time. That's one of the in-jokes in the BBC series, Sherlock, where Benedict Cumberbatch doesn't want to wear a deerstalker, and Martin Freeman finally persuades him to do it.
Not only does Blau have first editions, collections, prints, movie posters, sculptures, he also has kitsch, like Sherlock Snoopy, and the Good Detector in practically every other form imaginable.
Sherlock Holmes resonates around the world because everybody knows who he is. I'd like to say that if you got into a boat and sailed up the Amazon and then got in a canoe and went as far as you could, and you got out of the canoe and you went up to a tree and you carved on the tree the funny hat and the funny pipe and a magnifying glass, some Amazon native would walk out of the jungle and point and say, "Sherlock Holmes." Everybody knows who Sherlock Holmes is.
So a couple of years ago, I went to the Freer Gallery, part of the Smithsonian Institute, and they were having an exhibit of Indian artifacts. And as I'm going through this exhibit of Indian artifacts, they don't have a Sherlock Holmes, but they have a Jesus. And the Jesus, which these Indian artisans carved during the missionary days, I'm sure, was much darker skinned, and he had like 6 or 8 arms. It was very much a Vishnu version of Jesus. And I'm wondering, since you're talking about how Sherlock has been adapted into different countries and different cultures, is Sherlock Holmes essentially the same character, or does he take on the traits which each culture thinks makes it more heroic or makes it more theirs?
It's interesting. You can find these on YouTube now. German Sherlock Holmes films, French Sherlock Holmes films. And I think it's astounding, not surprising, but it's wonderful to see how German Sherlock Holmes is in the German films and how French he is in the French films. I've seen, but I can't understand the dialogue, a Chinese Sherlock Holmes film where Sherlock Holmes is in China. It's full of the acrobatic fighting, people jumping over buildings and things like that. But Sherlock Holmes is solving crimes.
Another reason collections were important is that they were portable. Blau says that special cheaply made editions were made just for travelers.
You're going on a train. There were stores that would sell not only magazines, but also books in railroad stations on boat piers. If you went to cross the Atlantic on an ocean liner, on the pier when you got on the ship, there were places you could buy books to take with you on the ship. And I've got a copy of one of the Sherlock Holmes stories in a cheap edition that someone bought on the pier in England and sailed across the United States going home and got to the harbor in New York, and there was a delay because they had to do quarantine, and she was sitting on the deck reading this Sherlock Holmes book and looked up, and there was Arthur Conan Doyle. So he signed the book for her in 1923, and the reason I know that story is that eventually she gave me the book, and I've got it. But this is how people read things. That was how you passed the time.
When Doyle penned Holmes, Blau insists that his stories were for adults. Today, it's a different story. You can find eyes of every age reading or watching?
Well, I'm not sure what's really essential about Sherlock Holmes. I mean, you start with Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes. He was the logical, deductive, exciting detective, different from all of us. He was bohemian, played a violin, he took drugs. I mean, he did all sorts of things to be different from his society. But once you establish a character like that, people can do anything they want with him. So people parody Holmes. Science fiction writers have had Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd, 25th century. They've had him on Mars. They've had him a computer. You can do anything you want with a character.
Though some Sherlockians may be purists, Blau is not.
The phrase is kid-vid. The cartoon shows that are on television that are made for children, like Muppet Babies and Animaniacs, there's a character with the funny hat and the funny pipe and the magnifying glass being a detective, and these kids, 4 years old, who don't read, they know who Sherlock Holmes is. And I think that's wonderful.
Bell being the inspiration to the Sherlock Holmes character is somewhat in doubt. Some say that Doyle based his detective off a celebrated and noted sleuth of the Victorian era. But Blau insists that there is one very good reason to believe that Joseph Bell was the model for the great detective.
Well, the main reason I think it was Bell who was the model was Conan Doyle said so. You can go on the internet now and see a Fox Movie Tone newsreel interview with Conan Doyle. It was made in 1929, in which he talks about how he modeled Sherlock Holmes after Joseph Bell. Joseph Bell was a doctor, professor at the University of Edinburgh Medical School, and that's where Conan Doyle went. Conan Doyle was one of his students.
And what Arthur Conan Doyle saw as an assistant opened his eyes.
Patients would come in, and the stories were widely told. Bell would look at them and say, oh, this is what you do for profession. This is where you're from. He could also figure out what was wrong with them medically from looking at them. And medical schools today still try desperately to teach doctors to look at their patients and listen to them rather than just study slides and what have you.
Doyle wanted his literary detective to be different from the others of his day.
He said at that time, all detectives were solving crimes by chance, by coincidence, by luck, or by someone informing. And you didn't have detectives thinking.
Ultimately, Blau says it comes down to story. And he suggests that in honor of the 125th birthday of the first collection of Sherlock Holmes, a fine thing to do might be to read an Arthur Conan Doyle story not about his great detective.
Conan Doyle was a wonderful writer. He wrote other things than Sherlock Holmes stories. He created other wonderful characters who are overshadowed by Sherlock Holmes. But if you'd like to read some really good stories, look for the Brigadier Gerard stories. Brigadier Gerard was an officer in Napoleon's army, and he was extremely brave and extremely stupid. And so the stories are very funny. Conan Doyle also created Professor George Edward Challenger, the hero of The Lost World and The Poison Belt, and some short stories. And Challenger was a wonderful character. I always encourage people to read Conan Doyle's stories that aren't about Sherlock Holmes. If you want to read some frightening stories, Conan Doyle wrote 4 short stories about a terrible and terrifying pirate named Sharkey, S-H-A-R-K-E-Y. Look up Captain Sharkey on the internet and read those 4 stories about pirates. Conan Doyle liked to tell good stories.
Another reason for Holmes' enduring success are all the other writers. Blau suggests that your favorite Holmes story may not have been written by Doyle, and that's all right by him.
Ever since the 1890s, people have been doing Sherlock Holmes on stage, on screen, on radio, on television. You just can't hide from him. You can't avoid Sherlock Holmes on stage or what have you.
Collecting clues, histories, and delving into the great mysteries for existence, I'm Andrew Hiller. Thank you for listening to Existence, Moments in Time. To listen to other segments or to hear this one again, please go to existence.com. If you want to tell your own personal or family story, please contact us, or you can build your own on our site. Once again, for Existence, Moments in Time, I'm Andrew Hiller.